Good morning. The house will come to order. Please stand if you're able. Our flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Bentz.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The person we'd planned to have for our opening ceremonies this morning has not arrived at the present time. So I had this quotation that I'd saved several weeks ago from President Obama that I thought I'd share this morning, and then we'll have a moment of silence. President Obama said recently that what's required of us now is a new era of responsibility, a recognition on the part of every American that we have duties to ourselves, our nation, and the world, duties that we do not grudgingly accept but rather seize gladly, firm in the knowledge that there is nothing so satisfying to the spirit, so defining of our character, than giving our all to a difficult task. This is the price and promise of citizenship. This is the source of our confidence, the knowledge that God calls on us to shape an uncertain destiny. Let's have a moment of silence. You may be seated. Courtesies. Representative Call.
Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and courtesies of the House and floor be extended to former Representative and Governor Victor Attia.
Representative Call requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and courtesies of the House and floor be extended to former Representative and Governor Vic Attia. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Welcome, Governor. Great to have you here. Further courtesies, Representative Tomei.
Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended again and that courtesies of the House and floor be extended to former Representative and Governor Barbara Roberts.
Hold on. We haven't done it yet. Representative Tomei requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and courtesies of the House and floor be extended to former Representative and Governor Barbara Roberts. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Further courtesies, Representative Stigler, do you have another governor?
Afraid not, Mr. Speaker.
Proceed.
I have none from my side of the mountain that's alive and well, at least at this stage of the game. Mr. Speaker, I would like to introduce two groups of folks up here. First, I'd like to introduce Tom and Pamela Barcanero and their son Tommy, who are over here in the upper gallery. Stand up. Tommy is a junior attending Bend Senior High. He will be attending Boise State in June. Go Lava Bears. And Tommy has volunteered last fall. He's interested in government. He volunteered in the Obama campaign. He's taking an AP government class. And he's involved in National Honor Society, Bend High Chorale and Jazz Ensemble, tennis, track and field, ski teams, National Forensics League. I don't think he has time for school. And he also helps out with the Red Cross and the Arthritis Foundation. So welcome. Sitting next to them is a group of students with their advisor, Liz Langmas, and students from the Cascade Youth and Family Center in Bend, and they're here to participate in the Capitol Rally for Runaway and Homeless Youth. This is a program I'm very familiar with. It's been in the Bend community for close to three decades. Some of these students have known personally the challenges involved in their younger years and no younger people who need the help of Cascade Youth and Family. We're glad to have them here, and we're glad to have this resource in our community. So welcome them today. Welcome to your Capitol.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Great to have you here. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to direct your attention up here to the gallery, and there's three classes visiting today from Riverview School, fourth graders, but I see Jake Bent. He's the teacher up there, and I don't think all three classes are up there yet. And would you have your kiddos stand, Jake? And please welcome them. Actually, Jake started his teaching career at my son's school, Lacombe, and now he's at Riverview. Lebanon Smart, we've held on to him. And please, colleagues, welcome all of them to their house.
Welcome. Great to have you here. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today I have three guests who are here to hear SCR 10. On the side aisle, I have Barbara Bacon Fallon, and she's Bob Bacon's daughter. Laurel Hood, who's a friend and colleague, has a wine shop in Cannon Beach. And Jackie DeGagne, and she's a personal friend of Dr. Bacon. And they're here visiting and visiting the Capitol and are here because of this memorial today. Please welcome them.
Welcome. Great to have you here. Representative Kettimer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask that courtesies be extended to the Oregon City Christian Academy, who are seated in the gallery, if you would stand, and please make them welcome. And welcome to you.
Welcome. So glad you're here. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like you to welcome my intern for the day, Brett Reagan. He is age 16 from North Salem High School. His interests are football, track, basketball, and thus far his life goals, he hasn't determined them, but he's still exploring them. I just hope he doesn't get any bad habits from this experience. Thank you.
Welcome, and Representative Esquivel, happy birthday to you today. We know today's your birthday, so we all extend happy birthday greetings to you. Enjoy your day. Any further courtesies? Let's go to our moment in sesquicentennial history. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's History Minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Jeff LaLand, who is the archaeologist and historian for the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest. Our entry today features Alexander Ross. Born in the Scottish Highlands, schoolteacher Alexander Ross immigrated to Canada's St. Lawrence River Valley in 1804. Befriended by fellow Scot Alexander Mackay, a veteran Montreal-based fur trader, both men found work in America's John Jacob Astor's Pacific Fur Company enterprise in 1810. The two voyaged around the Horn on the Tonquin, arriving at the mouth of the Columbia in March of 1811. Ross remained to help build Fort Astoria. Staying on after the forced sale of Fort Astoria to the British-owned Northwest Company during the War of 1812, Ross served as that firm's second-in-command at Fort George in Astoria, later promoted to chief trader at Fort Kamloops on the Thompson River in present-day British Columbia. In 1818, Ross was placed in command of the Northwest Company's new Fort Nez Perce, strategically situated on the east bank of the Columbia. In addition to writing copious official correspondence, Ross kept personal journals that later became the basis for his very popular memoirs entitled Adventures of the First Settlers on the Oregon or Columbia River and The Fur Hunters of the Far West. Alexander Ross has earned lasting recognition as a close observer of Native cultures and the Fur Trade Society. His memoirs remain indispensable sources on the history of the early Oregon country. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Witt. The clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying the presence of a quorum. Representative Huffman is present. Huffman is right over here, yes. Excuse for House business, Representative Barker, Representative Jensen, Representative Beyer. All other members are present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bill 690, 942, House Bills 2082, 2138, 2408, 2462, 2509, 2753, 2763, 2963, 3043, 3256, 3063. Passed the following House bills as amended by the Senate, House Bill 2086 to 2085. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate that the President has signed Senate Bills 55, 58, 59, 562, House Bill 2109, 2198, 2211, 2212, 2234, 25, 21, 28, 26, 28, 71, 3055.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. If we could have quiet in the chamber. The clerk will read the resolution.
H.R. 5, honoring former Governor Victor G. Atiyah for his achievements.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of H.R. 5. Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it is my great honor to carry House Resolution 5 today. 50 years ago this January, Governor Atiyah began his public life as a member of this body. And for fully one-third of our great state's history, he has been a proud public servant. And I thought it fitting that we here honor his 50 years of service in the place where that service began. In honoring Governor Atiyah's legacy, we recognize that his is a shared legacy. Along every step of the way, Dolores Atiyah has been there. Governor Atiyah addressed Dolores during his farewell address at the end of his second term as governor, and reflecting upon his opportunities and accomplishments, stated, "I know it was not easy for you, but you stood by my side through the darkest days of our lives, always there and always caring. Our state, now and in generations to come, are the direct beneficiaries of Dolores' sacrifices." So, before we begin to acknowledge and honor Governor Atiyah's service to the state, I think it right, and I think the governor would agree, that we first thank Dolores for sharing her husband with our great state of Oregon, for her sacrifice was the benefit of the people of Oregon. Thank you, Dolores. Governor Atiyah's lifetime of service began as a Boy Scout, a lifelong association that continues to this day. The slogan of the Boy Scouts is to do a good turn daily, and Governor Atiyah has done just that as a faithful public servant. Prior to serving two terms as governor, Governor Atiyah spent 20 years in the legislature representing Washington County as a member of the House of Representatives from 1959 to 1964, and as a senator from 1965 to 1978. In 1978, he was elected governor, attracting 55% of the vote and becoming the first Arab American governor in U.S. history. And he won re-election in 1982 with Oregon's largest gubernatorial margin in 32 years. Having spent his legislative career in the minority, Governor Atiyah's experience working across party lines enabled him to be effective working with an opposition House and Senate. He worked directly with the legislature, even meeting with them personally to confront and mitigate the harm caused by one of our state's worst recessions. Governor Atiyah put the interests of Oregon and Oregonians first. As Governor Atiyah told his staff on more than one occasion, "You get a heck of a lot more done in this world if you don't worry about who gets credit for it." Governor Atiyah faced difficult challenges brought about in large part by the decline of Oregon's timber-dependent economy. In 1981, the legislature faced many of the challenges we now face. Both tragic cuts and tax increases were required to balance the budget. Governor Atiyah remarked, "These are not times for the timid. These are times that will test our values, our judgment, our stamina, and our strength. We face difficult and unavoidable decisions, but we are not without wisdom, courage, or ingenuity to make these decisions. We are in a tight economic situation, but we are not destitute. We face an uncertain future, but we are not without the time-tested instincts which have served us so well in the past. The best will happen because we make it. The worst will happen only if we let it. Governor Atiyah's words offer much guidance to us now as well. Just as bold action was necessary to balance the budget, it was equally important to lay the groundwork for future prosperity. It was important that Oregon be seen as open for business. Governor Atiyah was committed to reforming Oregon's image as an anti-business state. Many things had contributed to this image, including Governor McCall's famous words and consequently a sign located at Oregon's California border. This sign read, "Welcome to Oregon. We hope you enjoy your visit." Governor Atiyah thought we needed more than visitors. We needed business to come and stay. We needed to send a different message. So he called his press secretary into his office and said, "You know what we're going to do to get rid of that sign? We're going to blow it up with dynamite." His press secretary didn't know how to respond at first. He was troubled by the thought of a certain incident involving an 8-ton whale, 20 cases of dynamite, and a shower of blubber over the picturesque Oregon coast. Eventually, Governor Atiyah relented, but I have it on good authority that he still believes this manner of destroying that sign was a good one. More than symbolic gestures, Governor Atiyah undertook a number of initiatives to diversify Oregon's economy. He worked with the Democratic legislature to win a legislative repeal of Oregon's controversial unitary tax, which was seen as both unfair and as a barrier to investment in Oregon. Governor Atiyah also enacted a worldwide tourism initiative, undertook trade missions, established an overseas trade office in Tokyo, Japan, and signed sister city agreements with China's Fujian and Taiwan provinces. As a result of these efforts, major foreign corporations began investing in Oregon immediately thereafter. For these efforts and his interest in developing relations with the Far East, the Emperor of Japan presented Governor Atiyah with the Order of the Sacred Treasure, both gold and silver stars. In addition to working to improve Oregon's economy, Governor Atiyah has and continues to work hard in preserving Oregon's natural heritage. In 1986, then-Senator Mark Hatfield worked to designate the Columbia River Gorge as the nation's first national scenic area through the creation of an interstate compact. Though congressional passage is all but certain, the legislation faced a veto from then-President Ronald Reagan. Upon learning of the threatened veto, Governor Atiyah called Reagan's then-Chief of Staff, Jim Baker, to tell him that he had never asked for anything before, but the preservation of the Columbia Gorge was of great importance. The legislation passed, and no veto followed. Governor Atiyah would later say that the future generations would admire our foresight in fighting for the preservation and orderly development of the magnificent national treasure we know as the Columbia River Gorge. Though Governor Atiyah has received many honors and accolades, there are two things hanging on his office wall that he cherishes most: a lifelong fishing license from the Warm Springs Indian Tribe in honor of his efforts to protect the Deschutes River, and a Press Corps Award for openness in government. He is the only governor to have received the award. In fact, Governor Atiyah coined the term media availability. Whether there was good news, no news, or even bad news, he spoke with the press weekly, even when his staff would have preferred otherwise. Governor Atiyah also opened up his cabinet meetings to then-Secretary of State Barbara Roberts, despite different political affiliations. Governor Atiyah has also been a lifelong advocate for fundamental rights. During his 1981 legislative address in the wake of several horrific hate crimes, Governor Atiyah called upon the legislature to take a tough stance against bigotry in the name of justice and equality. In making this call to action, he stated, "When covert bigotry is manifested in malicious and wanton racial harassment, when citizens fear for the safety of their lives and property, then we must be prepared to do more than sit back and call these depraved persons who are responsible cowards and bullies." The Oregon legislature answered this call, passing historic hate crimes legislation. Governor Atiyah's continuing advocacy for mutual tolerance, respect for minority communities, must be informed by his Arab American heritage. This is a heritage we share. In fact, Governor Atiyah and I are family. His father emigrated to America from the same Christian village in Syria from which my father and grandparents came, though coming to America a generation before. Soon after arriving in America, my grandfather worked for his cousin Victor at Atiyah Brothers before later setting out on his own. They remained close friends throughout my grandfather's life. When Governor Atiyah traveled to the Middle East on a trade mission, he took my grandfather along as his translator. The trip was not just about commerce. Governor Atiyah knew then what has only now become common knowledge, that when trade barriers come down, cultural barriers are soon to follow. Of equal importance to me, this trade mission to the Middle East meant a lot to my grandfather. He left the Middle East as a school teacher from a small village and returned to dine with princes and presidents. Because of you, Governor, He had the fullest access to the American dream. For my entire life, you have been both a larger-than-life figure whose legacy and example have seemed unapproachable, and you've also been a mentor who would meet with me at a moment's notice to offer me guidance in my life's pursuits. It is your unapproachable legacy, as well as your most approachable guidance, that initiated and fostered my earliest commitment to public service and my most recent pursuit of public office. While it is a legacy of accomplishment that we here honor, your legacy is something more. It is the example to which we should aspire. And though the thanks we offer here are much deserved and much overdue, the real tribute to your legacy is that it is the example. I, for one, hope to earn the legacy we have inherited from you. Thank you, Governor. Colleagues, I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, in 1984, a visionary governor traveled to China. Governor Vicatia went to the People's Republic of China, not for what it stood for at the time, but because he could see what it could become. And he went to Fujian, a province in China, and signed accords, sister state accords, which showed honor and respect and a desire for a relationship between the state of Oregon and the province of Fujian. In 2004, Governor Vicatia became the honorary chairman of the Oregon-Fujian Sister State Association, an association primarily of Chinese Americans who have great love for both Oregon and for China. And that association is perpetual and is growing and developing even closer relationships between Oregon and Fujian. On June 23rd of this year, a special delegation from the Fujian government is coming to Oregon, and their purpose is to honor Governor Victor Atiyah on the 25th anniversary of the Oregon-Fujian Sister State Accords, to honor him for his vision, for his leadership, for his dedication to relationships that will bond peoples so far apart in a way that will be good not only for government and business, but also for the cultures of the people of both nations. That's the kind of visionary man Governor Vicatia was as governor and continues to be to this day. We honor you.
Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, I'm reading a letter sent to us by Congressman Greg Walden. It says, "Greetings. Over the course of our storied history, Oregonians have selected innovative, visionary, and determined leaders to guide our state in new and better directions. Some who have taken over the helm have found their fair winds to speed them easily on their journey. Others have encountered rough waters and fierce storms. Some took on the challenge and didn't do so well. Others seem to perform with calm determination that inspires and gives confidence to all. Today, you honor one of Oregon's finest statesmen, Governor Victor G. Atiyah. Vic and my father served in the legislature together, and I had the opportunity to work on his successful campaign for governor in 1978. Over the years, our paths have crossed often and joined together. I saw in Vic a man of great competence and ability, neither flashy nor brazen. Vicatia is just solid, effective, and committed to Oregonians. Vic faced down fiscal challenges rivaling those of today in state government and put state government on a more affordable path. All the while, he knew for Oregon to succeed, it needed to rebuild its economy and grow new industries and jobs. So he set about putting Oregon's brand in the minds of people around the globe and changed state laws to make Oregon a place that was open for their business. His quiet but effective leadership style laid the foundation for a comeback of unprecedented success for years to come. In recent years, I've seen Vic continue his work for great Oregon causes and for our Native Americans, with whom he has maintained a very special relationship. No tribute to Governor Atiyah is complete, however, without a full acknowledgement of his wife, Oregon's former First Lady, Dolores Atiyah. always caring, always graceful, Dolores made Vic whole and made us all proud. Thank you both for your service and for helping Oregon the special place that we all enjoy. With congratulations, appreciation, and warmest personal regards, signed, Greg Walden, Member of Congress.
Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Thank you. Colleagues, it is a privilege today to rise for the sole purpose of honoring a great Oregonian, Governor Victor Attia. When one reflects on the great leaders of our state, there is reason Vic Attia's name is invoked, not just by Republicans taking our last grasp at a governor, but by folks across the aisle as well. Governor Attia, serving in this very chamber 50 years ago, then serving in the Senate as a member of the notorious phone booth caucus, and ultimately becoming governor just in time to tackle Oregon's last great economic recession, Victor Attia has seen all sides of Oregon. Throughout those formative years in our state's history, he led with integrity, grace, thoughtfulness, innovation, and simply plain old common sense. While individual office holders govern during a snapshot in time and are faced with circumstances unique to that point in time, I believe that true leadership is timeless, and Vic Attia exemplifies true leadership. 30 years ago, during his first inaugural address, Governor Attia spoke these words: "It is a beautiful day in Oregon. In the months ahead, you as legislators will be faced with thousands of decisions, thousands of judgments on how we in Oregon should live our lives. I know how easy it is to view the legislative agenda as a kaleidoscope, tumbling fragments of varying shapes and colors, each bearing little or no relation to the other. A vote on energy may follow a hearing on criminal justice. A meeting with a farmer may follow a debate on municipal bonding. In this kaleidoscope, a unity of design, a consistency of principle is very elusive." These words, colleagues, are as true today as they were 30 years ago, and they will ring true 30 years into the future. Governor Attia, thank you. Thank you for providing us with that consistency of principle to this building during your years of service, for instilling in us those who have admired your work so much with that same philosophy. And to you, Dolores, thank you for sharing your husband with us. Thank you for your commitment and your dedication to public service as well. Colleagues, please honor Governor Victor Attia. Oregon is proud to have the both of them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
In 1978, I was a gopher for the Mark Hatfield United States Senate campaign, much like I am today for the leader of the of our party. And Senator Hatfield wore a button and said, "I like Vic." I tried to convince other staff members that it was because I was his favorite staff guy, and nobody was buying. I don't think Mark Hatfield ever wore a campaign button, in my observation, but he wore yours, sir. And he wore it for good reason. And by the way, if you have extras of those, I could use them in my next campaign. But the respect that you have in this state has already been enumerated, and I just wanted to add my thanks to you and to Mrs. Attia for your service. Thank you, Governor. We like Vic.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Governor, we do indeed like Vic. And I want to add just one element of the history to the accolades that rightly go your way today. Governor Attia, as Senator Attia, was here when Senate Bill 100 was passed. He helped elucidate the House Land Use Committee on the environment, the history, the urgency that provoked the legislature 36 years ago now, I think, to pass that bill. And the remarkable thing to me is not just the wisdom he found then to cross aisles, cross the mountains, cross different divides to craft that kind of legislation, but the depth of his commitment continuing through today. And the witness to that leadership is in the landscape of our state even now. And the beauty and the industry and the productivity we have preserved and improved because of your wisdom. Thank you for your insight in 1973. Thank you for your insight today, and welcome home.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Call, do you wish to close?
Just to briefly say that in preparation for this speech, I've been reaching out for a number of weeks, talking with former elected officials, many of Governor Attia's former staff, trying to find that one story that summed everything up. And I came to find that I was the beneficiary of hundreds of stories that were very hard to sum up. And this is definitely not enough, but it's what we can do. And so I urge your aye vote on this resolution. Thank you.
Those who have the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. H.R. 5, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Congratulations, Governor Attia, and you now have privileges of the House and floor for all day, so you can lobby any member on any issue you care to choose. Representative Siegler, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I ask to return to unanimous consent to return to courtesies.
Representative Siegler requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Siegler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I want to extend courtesies to a very remarkable man who is up here in the upper house gallery. And this is Robert D. Maxwell, and I'd like you to stand, sir. Many of you may have read about a man or met a man who spent some of his younger years as a technician, fifth grade, with U.S. Army 7th Infantry, 3rd Infantry Division. His service during World War II occurred in lands far away, including North Africa and Sicily. His job in southern France was to string communications wire to connect the front lines with the American command post. His load of equipment was so heavy he was unable to carry an M1 rifle, so he was reclassified as a non-combatant and was given a .45 caliber pistol. Mr. Maxwell is here today to testify in the House Veterans Services Committee later this afternoon on a bill there regarding a Veterans Memorial Highway, connoting Highway 97 through Central Oregon, north and south, as Veterans Memorial Highway. And at this time, what I want to recognize him for in particular is that he is the only Congressional Medal of Honor winner in Oregon, and he resides in Central Oregon, in my home district of Bend. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to my esteemed colleague from Medford, who will read the citation.
Further courtesies, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we are truly blessed by having some real heroes today. This individual that I'm going to read the citation on is a remarkable man. I had the opportunity to meet him several sessions ago. On or about September 7, 1944, near Bascony, France, technician 5th grade Maxwell and three other soldiers, armed only with 45 caliber automatic pistols, defended the battalion observation post against an overwhelmingly onslaught of enemy infantry in approximate platoon strength, supported by 20-millimeter flak and machine gun fire, who had infiltrated through the battalion's forward companies and were attacking the observation post with machine gun, machine pistol, and grenade fire at ranges as close as 10 yards. Despite the hail of fire from automatic weapons and grenade launchers, technician 5th grade Maxwell aggressively fought off the advancing enemy elements and, by his calmness, tenacity, and fortitude, inspired his fellows to continue the unequal struggle. With an enemy hand grenade was thrown in the midst of the squad, technician 5th grade Maxwell unhesitatingly hurled himself squarely upon it, using his blanket and an unprotected body to absorb the full force of that explosion. This act of instantaneous heroism permanently maimed technician 5th grade Maxwell, but saved the lives of his comrades and facilitated maintenance of the vital military communications during the temporary withdrawal of Battalion Forward's headquarters. I commend you, sir, and welcome you to your house.
Well, welcome, Mr. Maxwell. Congratulations. Thank you for your service to our state and our country. Great to have you here today. Further courtesies, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As they're leaving the gallery right now, I have one other class, and I'm going to mention another class that's coming, so I'm not taking further time. But Vicki Brown just left with her kiddos, fourth grade class from Riverview, and we also have Sherry Wardlaw that will be bringing her class in a little bit. And so as you see them wandering the halls, colleagues, please welcome them.
Any further courtesies while we're back on this item? Propositions and motions. Representative Clem, do you have a motion? Representative Clem. We'll return to prop... In motion is Representative Clem to deliver a motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House concur in the Senate amendments on to House Bill 2630 and repass the bill.
Representative Clem moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2630 and repass the bill. It's your motion.
The Senate did a little work on this, abolishing the Oregon Friar Commission. They did it in the presence of two men dressed in chicken suits. Apparently, they've done some excellent work and raised a bunch of money for the food bank, and I would proudly endorse these additional amendments. Thank you.
Is there additional discussion? Seeing none, Representative Clem, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2630 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. House Bill 2630, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Further propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 2003, relating to use of land.
Bill read for the first time. It's passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 5052, relating to state financial administration, appropriate money, declaring emergency. House Bill 2667, relating to elections. House Bill 2749, relating to amusement device taxes, providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a 3/5 majority. House Bill 3254, relating to special districts and prescribing an effective date.
Bills read for the second time or passed the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill and a short summary.
Senate Bill 159, relating to communicable diseases and declaring an emergency, authorizes certain public officials to inspect and obtain information pertinent to investigation of communicable disease.
The question arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 159B. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Garrett votes aye. Senate Bill 159B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2005, relating to election petitions and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 2005A. No, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring to you House Bill 2005A, engrossed, which passed unanimously from the Rules Committee, although there were three people who were excused at the time. I have an unreasonably good authority. They were also in agreement with us, and we'll see later today. And it comes at the request of the Secretary of State. We have heard many bills dealing with the initiative for reform in my committee, a sign that members are bringing messages back from their constituents that Oregonians are concerned about their initiative system. In a recent poll, nearly 3/4 of the voters, 73%, think changes in the initiative system are needed. We need to preserve the right of Oregonians to petition and have an impact on their government. At the same time, we must address the lack of regulations that has made our process a testing ground for wealthy out-of-state interests. Oregon's initiative system is one of the most used and least restrictive in the nation. With the passage of this bill, we can restore some of the confidence in the initiative system. Oregonians will know that the initiatives on the ballot are there legally and legitimately. We can hold all who participate to the highest standards and reduce the gaming of our initiative system by enacting simple, straightforward reforms as laid out in this bill. First, we are going to prevent anyone convicted of fraud, forgery, or identity theft in the past 5 years from being a registered signature gatherer, and we give election staff access to the Oregon State Police database so that they can accurate background check. We're going to disincentivize the practice of gathering signatures illegally by authorizing the Secretary of State to pull signature sheets of those who have been found liable of certain civil and criminal elections offenses. We are going to stop contractors from going around the pay-per-signature law by prohibiting carrying of paid and volunteer sheets on the same clipboard, as well as we are going to stop chief petitioners, contractors, and subcontractors from looking the other way and shrinking from the blame of making them responsible for knowing if their people are breaking the law with the should have known. And I want to make this clear using the reasonable person standard, and I made that clear in the testimony in our committee as well. So the should have known standard is the reasonable person standard. We are going to penalize lawbreakers by allowing them to be prosecuted in civil court, and we are going to increase the minimum penalty fine for egregious offenses. Lastly, we're going to require petitioners to turn in original signature sheets once a month, providing more time for elections officials to process signatures, as well as reducing the window of potential identity theft and forgery. Colleagues, with the passage of this bill, we will substantially reduce the abuse of our initiative system by those who break the rules and return the process back to the Oregonians looking for to impact democracy. I urge you to vote aye, and you will see a number of floor letters that have been given. Oregon League of Women Voters came and testified in favor, AAUW in favor. I urge you to vote yes on House Bill 2005A. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I spent a fair amount of time as a citizen trying to pass an initiative, trying to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot a couple years ago, and I realized how hard it was. I was trying to get 145,000 signatures, basically with my wife and I as the staff, and it turned out to be very hard, but it really taught me that this is an important process, and this bill will help real citizens trying to put things on the ballot on their own right. It might not make it easy for illegal activities, but those of us that try hard to do it the right way find we're very much disadvantaged when there are folks who are not doing it the right way in the process. This is a good bill, and I will be supporting it.
Is there any further discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do, and thank you for coming by to share a few of the questions with me.
Thank you.
He does.
Actually, since I don't have my paper copy here in front of me, at the very end, Section 13, it says the Secretary of State may not include in the count any signatures gathered by somebody who has been convicted for a criminal offense involving fraud, forgery, or identity theft in any state. And then two, has had a civil penalty imposed under 260.995 for a violation of ORS 250.048. And so I was in the middle of looking it up when it looked like debate was going to be closed. So I have a question regards any civil, that little particular section. 260.995, civil penalties, says that, basically the Secretary of State or the Attorney General may impose a civil penalty for each violation of ORS or any rule adopted by the Secretary. And it cites the chapters, or any other matter preliminary to or relating to an election. So I'm wondering if we mess up our C&E reports and a violation is assessed, does that preclude us from collecting signatures?
I believe they're under 232, which is not the same issue, so you would not be exempt from the situation. Different set, C&E violations in a different area. So if you're asking me about C&E violations, you'd still be okay.
Representative Thatcher?
And then just a follow-up. Okay,
Further questions? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. So pertaining to all those signatures that would be potentially discarded, essentially, whether they were real signatures or not. You're just going to assume they're bad because it was collected by somebody who has had a conviction within the past 5 years. How would you know that as a person coming to sign a petition, whether that person, whether a volunteer or not, it doesn't differentiate between the pay petitioner or volunteer petitioner, whether that person has been convicted within that time frame when you sign a petition? That seems kind of risky to me.
Thank you for the question. I think it's a great question for this particular bill. It goes to this fact. If you are a paid signature gatherer, there will have been done a background check, and the people who are paying them would know. And so difficult there. And the issue is we're going to ask for that to be done before they start collecting any signatures. So that is one area. When it comes to volunteers, there won't be any knowledge to begin with. However, we have a complaint-driven system. And if someone were to say, I was really suspicious about that volunteer person, because when I got back home, I realized they asked for my driver's license and they asked some other questions, and I was a little uncomfortable. And I called the Secretary of State and said, you know, there was this signature gatherer today who did this. The Secretary of State would then investigate, and if they found out that, yes, that volunteer signature gatherer had been convicted of one of those crimes, including identity theft, all of those signatures that he had gathered on the sheets would be invalid because of this rule. And I guess what we're trying to do is, when you're trying to set up a program to get an initiative, that even if it's a volunteer, you should ask that question beforehand. The person could lie to you, but the reality is it is important that we are not putting people in a position of trust asking us for our signatures who might be using that inappropriately in other ways. And so this bill would make that a possibility, and I would encourage people to consider it. We are having a difficult time, I think, both with paid and volunteers to get people to sign because of the identity theft and the fraud and other issues. We're trying to clean this up so that we don't have that problem in the future.
Representative Thatcher?
One more question, I think.
Further question? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Okay. This would also, this bill would prohibit a person from circulating a petition for a friend or just a subject matter that the person believes in if they happen to be also a paid petitioner for something else. Do you want to expound upon that?
Yeah, I would be glad to. And again, thank you for the question. It does require that if you are a petition gatherer and you're being paid, that at the same time you're being paid, you cannot take with you a volunteer sheet. So as you know, last year we passed a bill that allowed for color coding so people would know if it was a volunteer or if it was a paid signature gatherer. And what this bill does is say we need to separate those so that we can keep clear the issue of who's being paid and if they're being paid appropriately and not by signature, which is one of the problems we've had in the past. And when you start mixing these different ballots, it makes it difficult. And I think that one of the problems is sometimes there are people who have made decisions about which kind of ballots they're going to sign because of whether it's a volunteer effort or whether it's a paid effort. And you can manipulate the system by putting one on top of the other, so assuming they'll come and then ask about the other. What we're trying to do is keep these two particular areas of initiative separate. And that's the reasoning for it, and I encourage you to consider that. So thank you.
Representative Thatcher?
Yeah, I guess just a couple comments to the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. I don't know. I'm just picturing some paid petitioner not able to even circulate a different petition to their family and friends simply because of the fact that they're being paid. That just seems like that stomps on First Amendment issues a little bit, and I think there might be problems with that. That you might encounter some problems with this bill passing. The other issue, you've got the potential of signatures that are discarded simply because they were collected by a nefarious individual, and that doesn't seem right to me without there being some sort of remedy for people to come in and verify or correct or swear to the fact, you know, outside of that process that they actually did sign that petition. And anyway, I just got a couple issues with that. Thanks.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes no. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2005, I'm sorry, Representative Gelsar, are you in the queue for this bill?
No.
House Bill 2005A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Gelsar, floor purpose to you in the queue.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Request permission to return to the order of courtesies, please.
Representative Gelsar requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Gelsar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I hope you will join me in extending courtesies to Joe and Bertha Alec, who are actually the constituents of the good representative from Oregon City, but Mr. and Mrs. Alec are also members of my family. They became members of my family when we adopted our daughter in 1998. Adoption builds families in a lot of wonderful ways, and I am honored to have Joe and Bertha be part of my family, and they have joined us today because Joe's family also immigrated to the United States from the same area of Syria as Governor Attias. So please join me in welcoming these very important members of my family to the Capitol today. Welcome to your Oregon House of Representatives.
Further courtesies? Seeing none, we're going to move in final reading memorials and resolutions. Clerk will read the resolution.
SCR 7, congratulating William Paul Young for his success as author of The Shack.
Question now arises upon the third reading and final passage of SCR 7. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Some may be surprised that I'm carrying and sponsoring a resolution like this. I was reluctant to at first. I don't do a lot of this, but learning more about my constituent, Mr. Young, and this piece of literature, I happily stand here today to support this resolution. The book, The Shack, as I understand it, sold 7 million copies and was going to be made into a movie. It had already passed the Senate floor and passed out of the committee I chaired before I'd read it. Last week I read about the first 25, 30 pages in my office, and then Thursday went home not feeling well and just laid in my bed and read it. I found a lot of parallels to my own life here. The hero of the book, go by Mac, he had a rather rough childhood and even rougher life away from home before he met a wonderful woman and they raised a family together. The story is about a tragic loss and a man who's struggling to find answers. And through his struggle, he clarifies and improves his relationship with his family and his community and his God. There's a quote I'm going to share with you. Bear with me here, that I found interesting, that jumped out at me. He's having a conversation with God that is represented by a rather large African-American woman called Papa. And he is crying. He's broken down. He's a rather stoic man. And he's broken down through his loss, discussing the tragedy that's been brought about in his family. And here Mac is quoted, "I hate all this, this crying and blubbering like an idiot, all these tears." And God responds, "Oh, child, don't ever discount the wonder of your tears. They can be healing waters and a stream of joy. Sometimes they are the best words the heart can speak." I really love that quote. Earlier in the book, and forgive me for not having the exact quote, he's in a conversation and they're discussing forgiveness, and God defines forgiveness as removing your hands from the neck of someone who's wronged you. Now, me personally, I like the policy of forgiving before I get my hands around the neck of someone who has wronged me, and that has served me quite well. My journey did not end with this book. I'm still looking for my answers, and I'm sure all of us still are. that if some of the millions of folks that have purchased and read this book have found an answer or taken away something from it, as I have, it is worthy of our recognition, and I urge your vote.
Further discussion, Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution, please.
To the bill.
Thank you.
Resolution, I'm sorry.
It was an interesting thing about a month ago when Senator Rod Monroe brought William Paul Young to the Senate to note his authorship and success with the Shack. Kind of a remarkable religious fiction. And it's remarkable in several ways. The author penned this for his children, and he anticipated that he would get it published. And 23 publishers later, it was unpublished. So he began photocopying it and giving it away. And soon it was distributed widely, and now it's multiple printings. It's well over 7 million copies that have been circulated, and it's going into several languages. And as the representative from the Christmas District indicated, it is going to probably be a movie soon. I was particularly intrigued the public was invited to a little meeting, and I got to meet the author and found he is a Warner Pacific College grad. And, you know, Senator Monroe and the representative from the Christmas tree and I are also alumni from there. And so there was a little basis, and then I thought, oh, it's published in Oregon, I better get a copy. So I got a copy of the book, and he was kind enough to autograph it. And I took it down to my little cabin in Scottsburg, which might be best. It's a cute little bungalow, probably a shack, though. And I thought that might be a good place to read the book. It's had about 40 years of neglect, and Sherry and I have been spending our time refurbishing it, all of our free time, and a lot of not free time refurbishing it. And we took it down there, and we had another maintenance catastrophe, and I didn't get the book read, and I left it there. And so when I came back, I thought, you know, I'd like to read this book before today. And so I asked the good representative if I could borrow his borrowed copy. And I read it last weekend, and I came away with a couple of legislative takeaways. As the representative from Happy Valley has indicated, has an interesting discussion about the Trinity. And Papa is the most interesting individual and talks about often that she is fond, or depending on the date at the time, or he is fond of various ones. And I started remembering back that as people this year began to press me for support for this bill and that bill, and often at pressure to take away from that bill, I finally came up with a way that sort of helped me cope with these people, and I started talking about, well, which of my children should I love the most? And I found this discussion about very fondly very helpful, because I find out I'm very fond of a lot of our programs, a lot of our constituents, and increasingly a lot of you, very fond. I think the other one is that Max struggles with this horrible battle with what he calls the great sadness. And I think we all face those challenges. Those are mistakes and hurts that come our way or that we create. And these have a way of damaging our spirit. And we carry them in the proverbial backpack that he carried. And they can weigh us down and weigh our spirits. And I found myself in the encouragement and support of the book, examining some of my own, the great sadness or sadnesses. And one of them was coming from the last campaign, where there were things said that I thought were not true. And they wounded my spirit, and they wounded my heart, and offended me, and I found have been a burden that I've been carrying, and one that I wish to do some more work on to get resolved. I think the book is a good one. I encourage you to take a read of it. I think it offers inspiration and courage for healing and restoration. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Schaffler, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Van Orman, how do you vote? Van Orman? Van Orman votes aye. SCR 7, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next resolution.
HJM 22, requesting passage of the Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of HJM 22. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you and commend to your approval a memorial that commemorates a sober event, but gives us an opportunity to rescue from that sober event some renewing of our commitment to each other, and to the safety and respect and dignity of all the people who live in Oregon and all the people who come to enjoy Oregon as visitors. We do indeed have the privilege of living in a beautiful state, and we encourage and invite tourists and visitors from around the country and beyond to enjoy the splendors of Oregon. The natural beauty of our state isn't sufficient to hide the ugliness of an incident that took place within our boundaries earlier this spring in the idyllic coastal town of Seaside. And so I am here today to ask you to help me begin to right the wrongs that occurred then and to prevent them from occurring again and staining our reputation. In March, two men, spring break, visited Oregon coast from the state of Washington, like many other young people, enjoying our beauty, enjoying the fun on the coast. But these two men were attacked by four other men. Nearby witnesses heard slurs and anti-gay threats, and the two visitors for Washington were left bloody on our beach in what the local law enforcement has labeled a hate crime. So I bring you House Joint Memorial 22 and ask you to join with me in sending a clear message to our representatives in Congress and the President who serves all of us, and ask them to pass the Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act. It is known as the Matthew Shepard Act. I call on you to join me in asking public institutions to remain vigilant against acts of hatred that are based on a person's characteristics or what others perceive their characteristics to be. We should not tolerate hatred aimed at anyone who lives in our state or visits our state. We should discourage and condemn acts of violence based on sexual orientation, gender identity, or other personal characteristics. People should not fear coming to Oregon just because who they choose to love. By passing this memorial, we will urge Congress to pass and the President to sign the long overdue Matthew Shepard Act. And I encourage your support for this resolution.
Further discussion. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the memorial.
To the memorial.
Colleagues, I had planned a different speech, but I have decided now I'm going to read you the short letter from our chief of police in Seaside. This event happened in my district, and I am just mortified and humiliated that this would happen in such a family-oriented city as such as Seaside. So this is from, and you have a copy of this on your desk, from Chief Robert Gross, Seaside Chief of Police. He writes, on Sunday morning, Sunday, March 22, 2009, the Seaside Police Department responded to an assault involving two visitors from Washington. Our preliminary investigation clearly indicated that this assault was motivated by the fact that both victims were gay. This was unmistakably a hate crime, and to call it anything else would have been a disservice to the victims and the community. While this was an isolated incident, the likes of which the community has never seen before, it was important to call it what it was. Even though we had limited information from the victims, the police department used every resource available to investigate this case. The community stepped forward to provide a $3,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of those responsible. Much of this money came from the businesses and private citizens, and it was clear indication that the community was not going to stand for this type of attack. This case remains unsolved at this time. However, we will continue to pursue any leads that will help us bring those responsible to justice. The hate crime that took place on Sunday, March 22, 2009, will not and should not be tolerated by our city or for any city for that matter. Men and women deserve the right to walk throughout our communities without fear, no matter what their sexual orientation might be. And on the back, you'll see the news release, and they will have a description of the people that they're interested in speaking to. And so please rack your brain. If you were in my district on that day, or you know anybody who was in that district, in my district on that day, to call, if they have any information at all, to call the police. Their numbers are provided there for the tip line. This is so important for us to not let this go by without our most serious attention. Please support this memorial.
Further discussion. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the memorial.
To the memorial.
Colleagues, I think it's very fitting that we're considering this memorial after we've spent the morning with our good Governor Attia, who was an advocate for hate crimes legislation almost two decades ago now, I think, more than that. And I want to thank you for that. But I think the incident in Seaside just reminds us that we need to be vigilant. And even though we have protections, hate crime legislation, hate crime laws on the books, that incidents like this happen every day and go unreported. And this is not only important for my community here in Oregon, the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community, because these incidents are chilling to my friends, to my family, to wonder if they are going to be victims of hatred when they're on the coast or in some other part of the state. And so I think that this memorial is very important for the citizens of Oregon. But it's also important for citizens across the country who do not have protections in their own states. They have no hate crime legislation in many states, and that we need the Matthew Shepard Act at the federal level to protect communities around the country from these kinds of acts. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nolan, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, thank you. And in closing, I want to turn to the wisdom of others, because sometimes words fail me. I turn to two wise men who have clear records of public service and integrity and honor. First, President Obama, in speaking just this past weekend, reminded us, we're not going to shy away from things that are uncomfortable to talk about. When we open our hearts and our minds to those who may not think precisely like we do or behave precisely like we do, that's when we discover the possibility of common ground. And secondly, I will turn to one of the original co-sponsors of the Matthew Shepard Act, Oregon's own Senator Gordon Smith, who said, "A principal responsibility of government is to protect and defend its citizens and to come to the aid of the mistreated." As a nation founded on the ideals of tolerance and justice, we simply cannot accept violence that is motivated by bias or hate. Colleagues, I think Senator Smith got it exactly right. A few minutes ago, about an hour ago, we all stood here and we pledged our allegiance to one indivisible nation with liberty and justice for all. Please join me in sending that message to Congress.
Those who are of the opinion that the memorial should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. HGM 22, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. The clerk will read the next resolution.
SCR 8, in memoriam, Mark Ted Winters, 1924 to 2008.
Question arises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 8. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I better get this right, colleagues, because I have someone really important beside me. And it is with great honor that I stand to bring you this resolution in honor of Mark. I don't know him by that name. We all know him as Ted Winters. Ted Winters is a man to be remembered for his remarkable life story of transformation. It is a testimony. His life is a testimony to the power of redemption in this world. I'd like to quote some of his own words from a 1974 Capital Journal. Some of us remember when the newspaper, the Capital Journal, an article written by an Associated Press writer by the name of Jenny Burdick. You may know that name. She tells his story in this article, and there's some interesting tidbits and some quotes from him I'd like to talk about. He started early. Ted Winters is a child of the Depression, the rough background, who started early with a life of basically crime. By age 17, Ted was sentenced to 5 years in the Oregon State Penitentiary for burglary. In late 1962, he'd escalated these crimes, and he was given a life sentence for robbing a Clackamas County store at gunpoint. His quote in this article was that he lapsed into crime because, quote, "because I couldn't take the pressure of financial problems and marriage, I started committing robberies to supposedly take the pressure off," unquote. I think that in today's economic times, we need to hear this from an earlier era.
And it was a very bitter and hostile Ted Winters who entered the Oregon State Penitentiary in 1963. Quote, I was extremely torn up emotionally because I had made up my mind that I couldn't make it. I almost committed suicide the day I entered prison. That's the dark side. But the rest of his life shines bright. He describes it this way. On the Sunday night before Labor Day in 1963, Winters was again on the verge of suicide and was praying. And, quote, I suddenly heard a voice say, walk in harmony with me. To me, it was very real. That was the turning point of my life. I've always known that since that time, I didn't need crime. I learned to appreciate myself and came to realize I could deal with life. This is true redemption, my friends, and we don't have very many witnesses to this, and I think we need to realize the importance of this. In 1967, his changed attitude, he was still in prison, mind you, intersected with some luck, and Winters was hired on the work release program by Marco Haggard, another great Oregon name, who was then the director of the Office of Economic Opportunity. So Ted Winters was by day an administrator and was reminded of his true status every evening when he checked into the Multnomah County Correction Institution at Troutdale to spend the night. In 1969, luck again intervened, and Governor McCall created the Office of Ombudsman and appointed Marco Haggard to run it. Winters then succeeded Haggard as the supervisor of the Office of Economic Opportunity. And at the end of that year, Ted Winters was paroled. Freeing him from his prison responsibilities, he became assistant ombudsman in 1974. Ted was guided by his convictions, and through these experiences, he turned his life around and became a model for others who also needed to turn their lives around. Ted devoted more than the second half of his life to post-prison ministries. He formed Magic Institute, a vehicle to provide training and consultation to correctional institutions and to former inmates. In 1971, he met a staffer for the Model Cities program, a beautiful lady, and they formed a partnership that has endured through the lifetime. And together, they have served the state in incredible ways. In Ted's case, he worked for the state of Oregon for the next 15 years. Let me list just some of the things he's done. He was 7 years a staffer to Governors McCall and Straub. He served as director of the State Economic Opportunities Office, helped establish the Housing Division, which later became the Housing and Community Service Department. He assisted with the creation of Oregon's Department of Human Resources and served as the Governor's liaison to Model Cities and Portland Multi-Service Center. I've got a long list here. I could go on forever. As state ombudsman to Governor McCall and Straub, he established the program for ombudsman programs for nursing homes and corrections. In 1985, Ted and Jackie became entrepreneurs and opened the first Jackie's Ribs, the forerunner of a string of successful restaurants in Salem and Portland, and many of us still remember Jackie's Ribs and being served by Ted. And, of course, all of us remember Ted as administrative assistant to his beloved wife, another denizen of our capital. Some of you may not know, but I would encourage you to get a copy of his books. Ted was a published author whose works included short stories as well as autobiographical novels or books. He relates his remarkable story of transformation and redemption from a life of crime to being a model citizen. He has made a positive difference in the lives of thousands. He is a model for how all of us can rededicate our lives by our own volition and with the help of our Creator. Please be aware of this remarkable man, and congratulations to his wife for their service to our state. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes aye. Representative Berger votes aye. SCR 8, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. The clerk will read the next resolution.
SCR 10, in memoriam of Dr. Robert Bacon, 1918 to 2009.
The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 10. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Dr. Robert Bacon passed away in January this year, and today we honor his life with this resolution. Dr. Bob Bacon was an OHSU Medical School anatomy professor who won numerous awards, including winning the Student Selected Alan J. Hill Jr. Award 7 times. Thousands of students count Dr. Bacon among their most memorable and favorite professors. In his honor, they have created the Robert L. Bacon Endowment for Medical Education in Richmond, that will provide OHSU students with learning opportunities that extend beyond the regular curriculum. Those who are among the pioneers within the Oregon wine industry, as well as aficionados of Pinot Noir in particular, credit him with being a known influence on the evolution of Oregon's wine industry. We are honored today by the presence of one of the first and best, in my humble opinion, Pinot Noir producers and my constituent, Laurel Hood, who kept a chair in her Cannon Beach wine shop for Bob to sit in as they discussed the issues and, of course, wine. And as you know, she's sitting on the side aisle. Bob Bacon was an integral part of the team of local advocates who helped craft and pass the Beach Bill in 1967. He's known in coastal communities as a tireless promoter of Oregon's beaches and the 362-mile coastline as a place of beauty and recreation, as well as a bountiful source of excellent seafood products. Most recently, Bob was advocating for the implementation of marine reserves, and he would be pleased to hear of our recent decision to move forward on these. Finally, Bob Bacon was an extraordinary example of a private citizen doing more than his part for his community and his state. His involvement in the issues that were of concern to those who reside on the coast, as well as those who enjoy all that the coast has to offer, can be held high as a model for all of us to attempt to emulate. On behalf of the Oregon House of Representatives, I would like to extend our deepest sympathies to his family and friends. He will be missed by all. And we are honored today with the presence of Bob's daughter, Barbara Bacon Fullen, and her friend Jackie DeGagne, as well as a good friend, Laurel Hood. Please join me in voting to adopt SCR 10 and honor this wonderful citizen. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Boone, do you wish to close?
No.
Those who have the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Barker votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. SCR 10, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. We want to extend our gratitude and thanks to the Bacon family gathered on the side aisle there. Thanks for your service. The clerk will read the next memorial.
SJM 11, urging Congress to fund cleanup efforts at Hanford Nuclear Reservation.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of SJM 11. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is the sixth time in my legislative career that I've carried either this or a similar resolution. And I know some of you are going to be very quick to say, Jensen, can't you ever get it right? Unfortunately, if this were up to us in this body, I think we could get it right. But it goes to a larger chamber, and that's the United States Congress that this resolution is talking about. And we're specifically talking about the Hanford issue and the Hanford cleanup. Colleagues, it is not with pride that I tell you that this is the largest environmental problem in North America. And it's not with pride that I tell you that it's just across the river in Washington from my district, and that it is contaminating as we speak that precious body of water that we call the Columbia River. Fortunately, the contamination at this point is small enough that the quantity of river water that's coming down the river is able to basically handle it. However, it is also not with pride that I tell you that the cleanup of that site, the Hanford site, which is currently over 100 years old, and the cleanup is projected not to be completed, assuming we can keep Congress interested in keeping going, it's not to be completed until the year 2048. It's hard to imagine, I guess that. But be this as it may, I have promised to keep this very short this morning, and I think you'll concur with me that the largest environmental problem in North America deserves our sending this memorial to the Congress of the United States, encouraging them to keep this project on the front burner. And when we look at our budget in the state of Oregon, and as small as it is, and appreciate that we come in with a multi-billion-dollar cleanup activity and ask the Congress to, appropriate all of the money at once, it's slow and hard to get them to do that. But I think we need to continue to encourage them to keep the funding going for that project. And additionally, there's one thing in the in the bill itself that we need to continue to encourage them to do, and that is recognize Oregon and give Oregon some voting authority as far as the tri-party pact that exists between the Congress, the Department of Energy, and the state of Washington To give Oregon an equal voting, in that is something that isn't going to take place. I understand. I understand the politics of it. But we still should continue to ask and perhaps even more than that to demand that we be at that table. And it's only because we've been fairly assertive or aggressive that we even have a kind of an ex officio voice in what takes place with that project. So I urge your support of this resolution, and thank you very much for having supported the body, for having supported it in the past, as I know you will today. Thank you, colleagues. Please vote yes on the SJM 11.
Further discussion? Representative Van Orman.
Speaker, to the memorial.
To the memorial.
I would simply like to say, as the representative of the Columbia Gorge, that the Columbia River is, in fact, the river of life. It provides tourism opportunities for our communities along the river. It also provides playground activities for many people who use that river for their sports. It is also the river of life. And Hanford is a scourge that I do believe we need to see addressed. And it's been stalled and stalled and stalled, and it's time to move on rapidly.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Jensen, do you wish to close?
Only very briefly to correct, I think, a mistake that I may have made when I said that the issue was 100. It'll be 100 years old before it's cleaned up. I believe I said that it was something that had been there for 100 years, and that's not correct. It was World War II period, 1940s, and it'll be 2048 before it is cleaned up. And just a minor, I hope minor, correction in my previous comments. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the memorial should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Barker votes aye. Representative Beyer votes aye. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Olson votes aye. SJM 11, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 690, relating to personal income tax compliance and prescribing effective Senate Bill 942, relating to Oregon Climate Corps and appropriate money.
Bills read for the first time were passed. The speaker's asked for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5550 relating to financial administration of the state treasurer and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 72 relating to special education and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 105 relating to penalties for environmental laws. Senate Bill 120 relating to first aid cards and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 122 relating to alternative education and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 127 relating to financial responsibility requirements for motor vehicles. Senate Bill 128 relating to documents issued by the Department of Transportation. Senate Bill 151 relating to administration of the states. Senate Bill 191 relating to service mining operations and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 225 relating to alcohol related offenses by persons under 21 years of age. Senate Bill 298 relating to forfeited animals. Senate Bill 323 relating to electronic submission of reports to the Legislative Assembly and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 377 relating to insurance trade practices. Senate Bill 533 relating to shopping cart regulations. Senate Bill 539 relating to exemptions from the insurance code. Senate Bill 599 relating to service mining. Senate Bill 664 relating to pilot project for temporary transfer of water rights. Senate Bill 745 relating to attorney fees and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 759 relating to local public safety coordinating councils and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 8901 relating to benefit plans for education district employees and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 970 relating to state real property.
Bills read for the second time or passed the third reading calendar. Third reading of Senate bills. Colleagues were planning to carry over these Senate bills in the interest of the hour. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on Wednesday, May 20th, 2009, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Effective Monday, the Senate President and I have established a special joint committee on transportation consisting of the following members: Senator Rick Metzger and Representative Terry Beyer, co-chairs. Senator Bruce Starr, Representative George Gilman, Representative Nick Call, co-vice chairs. Senator Larry George, Senator Martha Schrader, Senator Joanne Verger, Representative Jules Bailey, Representative Cliff Bentz, Representative Vicki Berger, Representative Deborah Boone, Representative David Edwards, Representative Mike Schaffler, Representative Jim Widener. If you have any questions, you may contact Mara Hall in the Speaker's office. Further announcements, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I just wanted to remind us that on Thursday we were going to be packing love boxes for our troops in the Galleria. And I believe the representative from Medford has challenged us all to see how many boxes we could sponsor with postage. It'd be really good if we could get those postage checks made out to the U.S. Postmaster to the House Republican office. Remember, it's $11.95 per box that we're going to send to our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. So I encourage you to get those checks so we can get the postage here by Thursday. Thank you.
Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this will be the last time I speak today. In honor of Governor Attia's years of service, the Arab American Cultural Center of Oregon is providing all of us here and anybody who's listening food on the terrace outside. Hopefully it stopped raining, but it's under a tent, so hopefully the food is protected. But everybody is welcome to come out there and join us for some Middle Eastern food. I think there are Arab Americans from all over the state, so most of you will probably meet your constituents and have a chance to talk with Governor Attia and Dolores. So please join us.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Land Use Committee will meet at 3:15 today. We're delaying a few minutes. Thanks.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Republicans, please take full opportunity of lunch on the terrace, although meet us in the caucus room at 12:15 for a Republican caucus. Thank you.
Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will challenge my colleagues on the floor here today to match me. I'm going to sponsor 12 one-dozen boxes for the troops.
Further announcements? Seeing none. Remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Wednesday, May 20th, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Wednesday, May 20th, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.